Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
You're listening to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Weitz, your host. Welcome. So this year, I totally reinvented myself. Yes, I had a total redo and totally by accident. In an almost embarrassingly Oprah-like way, I reinvented and changed my whole life at 45, and I started everything over again. And it's been amazing. I have had, and I cringe to even say it, my best life yet. I know, it's so trite. It's so Lifetime Channel, so Oprah. But I did it, and it worked, and here I am, ready to go on the Oprah Show and talk about it. Except, alas, there's no more Oprah Show. Just that tanking O network of hers, which I can surmise is not her best life. Certainly not her best bank account, given all the billions she's been hemorrhaging lately. I mean, she couldn't even afford that handbag in Switzerland, even though she said she could, but the sales clerk knew that she couldn't. I guess I'm going to have to settle for like a Lifetime biopic maybe in a few years. But who will play me? I would love Winona Ryder to play me, but I'll probably get Carrie Brownstein. Either way, I'd be happy. Now back to my best life. Here's how it happened. I left my job. After 15 years of teaching at a major New York City culinary school, who shall remain nameless simply because they don't deserve the free publicity, I went rogue. You know, like Sarah Palin, a maverick. I got all mavericky. I decided to go freelance, be a consultant, and also begin to build a career doing voiceovers and commercials. And it's worked. I'm consulting. I'm like getting paid for my opinion. I'm also getting paid to use my goofy little Lisa Simpson-like voice to sell stuff. I did a web ad for a bank, and I'm going on auditions, and I'm freelancing with three different agents, and it's happening. I even gave a Let's Get Real talk at a TED event a week after I left my job. Well, a TEDx event, but still, you know, who knew? And if it meant taking a huge risk and throwing away a safe, well-paying, easy job and going solo, then okay. It worked. As Chris, my co-producer, says, nothing great was achieved through safety. So I said F you to safety and got on my bike and rode away into traffic at rush hour without a helmet or a Citibank logo. And even though we're living in a safety-obsessed moment, where a kid can't step outside without protective gear and a lawyer's permission, or where you can't eat a runny egg without having to read a disclaimer first, or where our mayor fears for our lives so much that he wants to limit our beverage ingestion, instead of going after the corporate interests that brought those beverages to this market in the first place and made him so wealthy, you can still take a risk in New York City and come out alive on the other side. More than alive. Reinvented your best Oprah life ever without the hemorrhaging billions. And even though New York has never been so safe or so sanitized or so bland or dull or more Midwestern-like, it's still possible here to take great risks and survive. Now, I'm not talking about the classic big city risks like picking up a stranger in a bar or answering one of those ads on Craigslist or riding between subway cars, which you can't even do anymore, or buying weed from a guy in Washington Square Park or picking up the phone when it's an unknown caller. I'm not referring to the risk I took, the big F you to your job and striking out on your own either. Oh, no, that's not what I mean. I'm talking about a much bigger risk, one with much higher stakes, a much greater chance of crushing loss and disappointment, one where you are stepping off into the unknown and just hoping that you'll make it to the other side. And it's a risk with a richer and better payoff than you can ever imagine. The big risk I'm talking about here is the risk you take every time you sink your teeth into a fresh peach, or drop $4 on a pint of berries, or try to sniff out a ripe cantaloupe. The scary, unknowable, eternally mysterious risk you take when you fling yourself off the cliff of risk and into the valley of fruit. And I don't mean Christopher Street on Gay Pride Parade weekend. I mean the other fruit. Yeah, I know, it doesn't seem like something so important or serious or worthy of discussion, but really, it is. I mean, what did Adam and Eve eat? Fruit. What did God give Moses in the desert? Manna, which was fruit. What would you look for first if you were lost and hungry in the wilderness or in Midtown with no weapons or source of fire? Your phone! No, because there'd be no service because it's after the apocalypse. Fruit! What's the first thing that Chris says he bought in the blackout of 2003 when he thought it was another terrorist attack? Fruit! What's the first thing that went bad because the power didn't go back on for a week? Fruit! But that's another subject, which we've addressed in The End Is Near, What's for Dinner? Now, even though New York seems to have turned into the Big Apple Slurpee now, or sometimes it seems more like the Big Potato drinking a Slurpee now, if you ride the subway at rush hour especially and can't find a seat. You see what I mean by the big potato? Fruit is so important and so delicious and so critical to our survival as a species, and yet so elusive and middling and so often so disappointing. It's truly our nation's greatest national crisis at the moment. Our fruit is so bad so often. And buying it means taking a great risk, more volatile and unpredictable than the Dow Jones or the NASDAQ, or whether Little Kim or Marie Osmond will win Dancing with the Stars. But we must take that chance. We can restore this nation to greatness by all committing to risking, or better yet, demanding better fruit. We deserve it. This is America. This is the effing Big Apple, after all. So surprisingly, this summer has been a miraculously delicious fruit season for me. It must be my good karma coming back around, or just pure fruity luck, but I've been eating some of the best fruit I've ever had this summer, and it got me so excited and hopeful about the future that I had to do a second, or it may even be a third show about fruit. Now, I know if it's August, you say she's going to be talking about fruit. You can plan your summer vacation around me that way. I can just hear it. Oh, when should we go to Rehoboth this summer? I don't know. Find out when she's talking about fruit again, and we can skip town that week. Well, haha, joke's on you, sneaky listener, because this show's a podcast, so there's no escaping my yearly fruity diatribe. Unless you think I'm some kind of snobby, all-organic, elitist, farmer's market-only kind of fruit eater, let me set the record straight. I am a snobby elitist, but that's because I watch Downton Abbey and Mad Men, not because I spend $4 on a local organic seasonal peach. As a matter of fact, quite the contrary. The best fruit that I've eaten this year has come from A, the discounted, bruised, and too ripe produce rack at my supermarket, B, the street carts in Manhattan, C, Rossmann's, which is a cheapo produce market along the nastiest stretch of Third Avenue in Brooklyn next to the live poultry and goat slaughtering market, and D, from the woods, where I've picked it myself. So no, not an elitist fruit eater, just a freelancing, self-employed consultant trying to get a good peach in before it's apple season. And it's a gamble. I know. And I don't gamble. I am way too thrifty and cheap for that. Although I did just do a radio ad for a casino in the Poconos where I had to scream, "I won! I won!" But what did I do with the money that I got paid to scream? Bought more fruit. Of course, fruit buying is my gambling. It's a big risk. Remember the Seinfeld episode where Kramer returned his disappointing fruit to the store? I don't see any problem with that. You never know what you're going to get when you buy that peach or melon. Could be incredible, juicy and sweet and luscious, or it could be mealy and dry and tasteless. You never know. Learning how to pick out fruit by smell and color and feel helps a lot. but so much of it has been engineered for shipping and storage that it's lost its ripeness indicator. So staying hard and odorless for weeks, like the fake fruit arrangement your grandma kept on the dining room table, only vaguely flavored like fruit and technically edible. That's why I like the discount rack. They don't refrigerate the stuff on the discount rack. And the same with those street cart guys. They just keep it out in the sun all day, so it keeps on ripening and aging and basically fermenting in its own sugars. And that's how I like it. But there's always that risk. It's undeniable. It's dangerous. It's New York in the 80s. It's Times Square in 1983, not 2013. It's places like Rawhide in Chelsea, recently shuttered and about to become a chain store pizza place, where you'll get safe, corporately programmed pizza instead of the unpredictable, semi-dangerous pizza you get at your locally owned spot, like Joe's right across the street from it. Or it's the old elevated railway on the west side with its weeds and crack vials and illicit gay public sex, not the High Line, which, as Chris likes to point out, is the most controlled environment since Auschwitz. Out of safety, you get nothing. Out of risk, you may be disappointed, but you also may be blown away. With risk, there's rewards. And I don't mean customer service rewards. I mean actual rewards. Eating a perfect peach blasts an imprint onto your sensory memory, leaving you drooling and licking juice off your arms. Has that ever happened with a peach Jamba Juice smoothie? Picking warm blueberries off a bush on a mountain that tastes so blueberry-y that they taste like artificial blueberry flavor doesn't make you think, wow, I'm going to go get me some blue-flavored sports drink after this to replicate that experience. The plums I bought this week on the discount rack were so deliciously plummy and juicy and amazing. The best plums I've eaten since the one I ate in Seattle a few years ago at a farmer's market, which was, at that point, the best plum I had ever eaten. Now imagine if you were 3 years old and your mom handed you a piece of that plum, so juicy that she made you eat it outside, with the juice dripping down your chin and the contrast of the tart skin and the sweet flesh between your little toddler lips. Chris says he remembers his first whole plum experience like it was yesterday. He was four-ish and outside on the deck at his best friend John Paul's house in Alabama, and he saw a bowl of fruit but didn't know what it was. So he grabbed a piece and bit into it and had what he describes as a fruit orgasm. Or more specifically, his first plumgasm. All plums he has ever tasted have had to live up to that first plum. And that's what's called a Proustian moment. At least according to Wikipedia, it is. Do you think that plum would create the same memory as the squeezy pouch of plum applesauce that you ate strapped into your car seat on the way to Gymboree? Like I said last summer, you can't create Proustian moments with grape-flavored gummies. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back.
This song is called Dirty Hands by Eula, and you are, as you know, listening to Let's Get Real on heritageradionetwork.org. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food on the Heritage Radio Network. I am Erica Wides, your host. I'm not sure why this has been such a good fruit year. I mean, we had so much rain in June. We had the rainiest June ever. And then we had the hottest July ever. And now I think we're going to have the coldest August ever. Yet it seems to have worked out to be the best fruit year ever. I've eaten better plums, nectarines, blueberries, and cantaloupe this year than I can remember eating in years. Not to mention how it's worked out for my bees, who had their biggest honey production in 4 years of beekeeping, producing a whopping 70 pounds of honey in the spring harvest. But I'm not a beekeeping, blueberry picking, real food elitist. Not at all. Now, up at my tiny bungalow where I spend my summers, the grounds of the community are totally covered in wineberry vines. Wineberries are kind of a wild raspberry, and they're an invasive, and they cover that place. Now, that vine will plant itself between your toes if you're not careful. but for a few sweet weeks in July, the wine berries are ripe and delicious and bursting. And we pick them by the handful and just shove them in. But most of my neighbors aren't even aware that they're edible. So they'll get in their cars and they'll drive to the supermarket and they'll buy a pint of pesticide-covered flavorless raspberries flown in from Mexico when they could be gorging their faces on wineberries right in their backyards. Many of them have even asked me with horrified looks on their faces if the wineberries are actually edible. Really? They ask. You can eat them right off the vine? You're not afraid of that? Foodiness is a far worse invasive species than wineberries because foodiness digs its viney tentacles deep into your brain and makes you distrust nature. And with trust in nature, how will you survive? Or without trust in nature, how will you survive when the whole man-made thing collapses? Of course, if children are actually exposed to real nature as children, they don't have that fear. Like when, as a child, I ate a peach that I had picked off a tree. And as I was eating that delicious peach, the pit split open and a big old huge worm came crawling out and right up into my face. But I loved peaches so much that I got over the Pavlovian retching feeling that I subsequently got whenever I ate one because I wanted to get beyond that and love the peaches again. And now I'm okay. Or squatting in a giant field of strawberries when we were supposed to be picking them, but just eating my face off instead. I don't think little Lexi and Hampton are having the same experiences with fruit these days. But as always, the foodiness industry wants to convince you that fruitiness is better than real fruit. Suddenly, there's all kinds of nutritionism propaganda about fruit having too much sugar and that we shouldn't be eating it. That artificially flavored and sweetened fruitiness snacks are a better choice. Yeah, fruit is the new public enemy number one. It is so totally Orwellian. We read these news feeds on our devices about how dangerous the sugar in fruit is and how we should be eating safe, fat-free fruit-flavored snacks with vitamin E instead of eating the real thing. Really, people? This is how far down the foodiness rabbit hole we are. Do you know anyone who's gotten fat or become diabetic because they ate too much real fruit? Well, there's that morbidly obese woman in accounting who's always eating way too many apples and gorging herself. And if she would only stop eating all those apples, she might lose that 300 pounds or so. It's true. You may get a little gas or even a little touch of the runs if you eat too much fruit. But let's cut out this bullshit about fruit and sugar right now. When you eat a whole fruit, you're getting tons of other stuff along with the fructose, like fiber and water and vitamins and pigments, not to mention satisfying pleasure. So you don't need to eat another bag of fruitiness snacks an hour later, followed by a bag of chips, followed by a cup of coffee because you're crashing. So let's just stop this nonsense right now. Let's pull back the curtain and expose the fruitiness fraudsters for who they are, industry. Because you know who's back there when you pull back the curtain? Some nerd food scientist in New Jersey coming up with new fruit flavorings and some Donald Rumsfeld foodiness robber baron and a marketing expert from Omaha with a college degree in public relations. Yes, let's get real, listeners. That is who is manipulating you. The wrong kind of people. But what about pesticides, you say? I don't want little Lexi and Hampton to eat all those chemicals, so I only feed them organic, fruit-filled hemp seed bars and squeezy pouches of pureed fruit. That way, they don't get the pesticides, and I don't have to wipe them down if they get all juicy. And by I mean my $3-an-hour West Indian nanny who doesn't want to get her iPhone 5 sticky. Well, yes, non-organic fruit, unfortunately, has pesticides on it. Yes, foodiness has attacked fruit. It has attacked all real food in order to push us towards itself. It's like what recent corporate drugstore chain execs said at hearings on the Upper West Side of New York to prevent entire blocks from being turned into Rite Aids and CVSs. The drugstores are everywhere, so New Yorkers must love them. Here's how that goes. You kick out every local business and replace it with a drugstore, then claim New Yorkers must love shopping for nothing but toothpaste, fat-free cream cheese, flavored yogurt, and bottled water. But that's like sending all the Jews to concentration camps and then claiming they must love concentration camps because they don't want to leave. That, my dear listeners, is what you call being pushed down a rabbit hole. So let me help pull you out. The benefits of eating the real thing outweigh the risks, I think. And you have no idea what's happening to that squeezy pouch of fruit as it sits in that plastic package on a store shelf for years or even months. No, for months or even years at a time. Not to mention that that fruit is cooked to death to make it shelf stable. You don't have to refrigerate those packets. So how do you have to make that happen? You cook the fruit to death. Buy the real fruit, wash it, and let your kids eat it. Eat fruit, not squeeze. Eating real fruit is one of the pathways back to reality. It's a doorway into having your best life ever. It's revolutionary, but it's a risk. Now, I think it's a risk that is totally worth taking. It's like having one real friend instead of 1,000 Facebook friends, or having a conversation with a person face-to-face instead of texting one. Now, Chris tells me a story that in the morning, he walks his dog around West Chelsea with his headphones on, ignoring all the people because he's so filled with hate. And when he walks his dog in the morning, he passes by dozens of people on their way to all the new businesses like the ad agencies and the modeling agencies and the art galleries that have popped up over there. And they're all carrying their little bottles of $12 juice or their 40-ounce coffees or their power bars or even some of them their bagels. At least people still eat bagels, even if the bagels in New York really kind of suck right now. But there's one guy that he sees that he passes every morning. And this guy, when he sees him every morning, is eating an apple. Like a whole real apple. Not a juice or a smoothie or an apple oat flax bar. Just an apple. How revolutionary. I'd like to meet that guy, actually. We could have a chat in person, face to face. Maybe share some berries, talk about our lives. He's probably a consultant, too. A rebel. A risk taker. You may never have thought of yourself as a rebel or a risk taker, but think of it this way. Being a rebel or a risk taker has never been easier. You don't have to refuse to sit in the back of the bus and get arrested. You don't have to set yourself on fire to stop a war. You don't even have to write books that put you in prison and then win posthumous Nobel Prizes. No. All you have to do today to be a rebel is have a conversation on the phone with a friend while doing nothing else, or look up while you're walking, or reconnect with an old friend by having them over for dinner, or listening to Let's Get Real instead of watching Rachel Ray. And eating an apple on the way to work instead of an apple-flavored protein breakfast bar? Maybe the apple is okay. Maybe it sucks. Maybe it's good. Maybe it could be an applegasm, and that's the point. You'll never have an applegasm from apple cinnamon-flavored protein bars, because you'll never know what a real apple tastes like. And even if that apple isn't the best apple you've ever eaten, at least you've eaten it. You've taken that risk. You've made that leap. You've experienced life. You can have your best life ever via that apple. And if that isn't enough, just think of the Instagram possibilities of all that real fruit in your diet. So if you don't want to eat shit or have a safe and meaningless existence, keep tuning in to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food here on the Heritage Radio Network with me, Erica Wides. Now remember that you can find all of these shows on the Heritage Radio Network on our website, which is heritageradionetwork.org. They're also all on iTunes. You can also follow me on Twitter at Let's Get Real Show. You can also find me on Facebook. And you can check out my website, which now has video of all of these shows at letsgetrealshow.com. So thanks for tuning in tonight. Thanks to my co-producer, Chris Nutter. Thanks to Ben Kaplan, who wrote my theme music. Thanks to Jack Inslee, back in the studio after being promoted to chief executive ruler of Heritage Radio. And we'll see you next week. That's it.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.